Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out. And when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill, and joining me here in our Durham studio for the first time is Joe Healy.
Yeah, nice to be here. We can actually see each other. That's a new thing. That's a big positive. I've been a North Carolinian for about a week now, and pretty excited about it. First time, long time, I guess they would say, in the world of sports radio. But I think this is going to be a real positive for the podcast. Looking forward to being able to actually kind of have these face-to-face conversations. We can play off each other a little more. We can have a little more dynamic conversation. So I think just from a podcast production standpoint for you, the listener, I think this is nothing but positive.
Yeah, I think you, the listener, are going to notice it most notably because I will be able to interrupt Joe more, and I probably will take advantage of that. But
which is fine. Like that's part of the deal. Like, I mean, and let's be honest. Like, there have been innumerable conversations we've had on this podcast in the last year where I've actually probably just wished someone would cut me off because I'm struggling to make a point. I'm kind of rambling on, but feel like I need to finish the point I'm making. So it really, I think, could probably only help me.
So we will see where that goes. We're excited about this. Hopefully it creates the kind of positive product we're looking for. Obviously, Joe did not make this move just for the purpose of the podcast, however, but we will happily reap the benefits here on this medium. But today, more than Joe's debut in the Baseball America studio, which we don't have a name for, I'm open to sponsorship on that. I mean, I don't really necessarily have the authority to make such a decision, but Joe has his Whataburger mug here, so open to that.
But that's not to say, important point to make here, just because I have a Whataburger Yeti tumbler here does not mean I would not be open to, you know, the podcast studio sponsorship relationship with, say, Cookout or Bojangles. Like, I'm not closing any doors.
Okay, that is important to note. So I fully endorse Cookout as well, which for those of you that don't live in the Carolinas is delicious. We, though, are here to talk with two coaches who are restarting programs this year. We have Boise State coming back in after 40 years under Coach Gary Van Tol, and Akron also restarting in 2020 after a break of like 6 years, I think it was, under Coach Chris Sabo. And so those are two coaches facing some unique challenges in that they had to recruit a full 35-man roster. They had to, you know, sell their vision to players who haven't, you know, seen, they're starting from scratch. There's nothing to compare it to. They had to hire coaches. They had to do all these things for the first time. And so it's an interesting place for both of them to be to be working from. And so we're excited to hear about how they went about that, what challenges they faced, and where they see their programs going in the future. And I mean, they're two similar programs in that respect, but they're also two kind of different programs, because Boise State, as a part of the Mountain West, is working with a bit bigger platform, I guess, you know, because of what the football team has been able to accomplish. It's a much more widely known brand. Akron, its history before the program got cut was not going great. And so now you're working, they're trying to reverse all of that while restarting a program. So kind of two different places for these programs, but there are a lot of similarities in that they're both somewhat, you know, urban campuses. They both have minor league baseball in their towns. They're baseball kinds of places. They're places where people wanted the programs to come back, and now they are. So it creates interesting dynamics, and we're going to dive into that with both Gary Van Tol and Chris Sabo here in a second. Before we get to them, though, I want to just remind you that as we move into the holiday season, you can check out store.baseballamerica.com for maybe some present ideas, you know, maybe some stocking stuffers. Maybe some of these books are too big to put in a stocking, though, and you have to wrap them up and put them under the tree by themselves.
I think most of the time you could, if you like lay the stocking down and like set the book on the, you can kind of jiggle
it. That
was
definitely like the play when I was little. My parents did that.
Yeah, like so it sticks out the top, and you can kind of jiggle it down in there like a pillowcase, you know, or you got to kind of work it into the stocking. Like, I think when there's a will, there's a way.
I don't know if the handbook might be too big for that.
Maybe.
But the handbook will not be there for stocking stuffer season. But you can pre-order it. Our present to ourselves is to finish the handbook before Christmas. So we're working diligently to do that, but you can order it, you can pre-order it at store.baseballamerica.com. You can also place your order for Head of the Class, which you have heard me talk about maybe at ad nauseum this fall, but it is our new college baseball book looking back the last four decades of college baseball. It's a great book, all the best teams, best players, best programs from the last four decades, all wrapped up into one neat little package. We also have another edition of Before They Were Stars, which again looks back at old scouting reports for, you know, some of the biggest stars in the game over the last few decades. We're talking about guys like Andrew Jones and Francisco Lindor and, you know, just some, all of these incredible players, what we were writing about them before they were big leaguers in their draft scouting report or one of the reports from the handbook or the top 100. So make sure to check those out at store.baseballamerica.com. Joe, I know you recently had gone to see Head of the Class for the first time, and you were having fun diving into it, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I assumed that I would. I know we've had this kind of conversation on the podcast before about how excited I was just to kind of get my hands on it, and I've had a chance to do that this week, just a few minutes here and there, and I really enjoyed it. I went back and looked at, for example, and this is the kind of tidbit that I'm interested in, and I think you as someone listening to a college baseball podcast, you know, in December, I think would be interested in. I went back and looked at the 2005 season. It's one of the first seasons I remember really like following college baseball day in and day out, and looking at, you know, the kind of the first team All-Americans and the second team All-Americans, and it was kind of amazing to look at, you know, all the first teamers were deserving. There was nobody there that really stood out as not being deserving. But then you looked at the second team, and it was, you know, just a ton of major league stars. The combined WAR, if you were to look at their Baseball Reference WAR, is probably four times as high on the second team. Now, Max Scherzer kind of ruins that curve a little bit because he was on the second team that year. But it's just kind of amazing the difference there. And it's one of the things I love about college baseball. All of those guys on that first team were deserving. People had fantastic college seasons and careers, but maybe just weren't you know, able to make it happen in pro ball. And it's one of the things that I love about college baseball is that we can have these legendary players and teams that maybe don't necessarily resonate beyond that. So, you know, I give Head of the Class my highest recommendation. I think you'll really enjoy it. I know I've enjoyed it. I think the only question left to answer, Teddy, is where they could possibly get their hands on an autographed copy of Head of the Class.
Now, that's an interesting question that I don't have a great answer to, but if you are so interested in my autograph or perhaps Matt Eddy's autograph, our editor who really spearheaded the project, brought it all together for us, I don't know, drop me a DM on Twitter, @TedCahill. email me, teddy.cahill@baseballamerica.com. We'll figure something out. But the most important thing is to place your order for it, whether it has my autograph on it or not. So you can do that at store.baseballamerica.com. Now, we want to get to these interviews with Boise State coach Gary Van Tol and Akron coach Chris Sabo. Again, two coaches facing similar challenges as they restart programs that have been dormant. We're going to start here with Boise State coach Gary Van Tol. Today on the Baseball America College podcast, we are excited to welcome in new Boise State coach Gary Van Tol. Gary, this is a brand new era of Boise State baseball. Just how excited are you that we're closing in on opening day for the restarting of the Broncos program?
Well, it's hard to put it in words, really. Once in a lifetime opportunity, and you know, feel very blessed and honored to have this opportunity and challenge to bring back baseball to Boise State. It's been 40 years since baseball was played on campus, and we're 78 days away, and it's going to be historic, and people are fired up, and Bronco Nation has been very patient and waiting a long time, and we're ready to roll. I guess ready or not, we better be ready in 78 days.
You got hired for this job in November 2017. This fall, you were finally able to get a full team on the field, play some games for the first time. Just what did that feel like, and what were you able to learn from that?
Patience. It's been a long stretch, and you know, coming out of the pro game where you're on the field every day and playing to not playing in 2 years, basically. It's been 2 years now that I've been on the job trying to put together this thing and just take it one step at a time, but really just having patience. There's so much that, you know, you want to get done. It can very easily get out of control. And so we're just trying to really keep things simple, build a strong foundation. And, you know, that starts with putting together a staff and a roster, like you mentioned, and putting together a schedule and, you know, just having a blueprint, I guess, and a plan that hopefully you'll be able to execute. But, you know, patience is probably the biggest word that I remind myself and everybody that is associated with our program right now. And I think, you know, the administration and the university and the community knows the task at hand and knows it's going to take some time, but the benchmarks have been set, I guess, or the bar has been set at Boise State. The culture has already been established here. The success of all the programs at Boise State, you know, I know what I signed up for, and obviously people have high expectations with all the championships that we've been able to win here at Boise State, and we hope to add one more banner to that mix sooner than later.
I'm curious what attracted you most to this particular project. I mean, this is, you know, as you alluded to, I mean, quite the undertaking, literally building a program from the ground up. What drew you to it most?
Well, I think that was it right there. You know, working in pro ball with the Chicago Cubs for 10 years, 17 years in the college game. Prior to that, I never really thought I was going to go back to the college game. Cubs organization, unbelievable. The people there, obviously being a part of a World Series championship team in 2016, 108 years, was pretty special. And so I was just focused on that piece and this chapter in my life. And but as you guys know, you never know when opportunity is going to come up and what's going to come around the corner in this business. And the chance to start a program from scratch, I think, was the biggest piece in making that, I guess, decision at the end of the day, because you can go through your entire lifetime and never really be in position to have an opportunity like this presented to yourself. So that challenge was big, and also Boise you know, is our home. This is where I live during the off season. So having ties in the community, you know, Boise is one of the fastest growing cities in the country, but still a lot of small town values. And doing some things in the baseball community when I was with the Chicago Cubs to help young kids develop and learn the game, being able to do it in what we're calling, you know, our hometown, where my wife and I, Chrissy, are raising our family. That doesn't happen very often either. So it was a great match, a great fit, timing's everything. And again, I know there was a lot of interest and a lot of quality baseball people that were interested in this job, and to be selected at the end of the day, it's quite an honor.
I'm curious, with a job this big, where does one even begin? So I'm curious, when you get named head coach and you know that you have this project in front of you, what was job one? Where do you even start, and what did that kind of look like for you?
Well, the first thing was trying to respond to everybody that reached out to me to say congratulations. And all those people that, you know, you look back in your life that changed the course of your whole direction and with different opportunities, and just, you know, thanking a lot of people, really. But, you know, having experienced the college level prior to going into the pro game, I knew kind of what was in front of me, even though this is my 31st year and I've never experienced anything quite like this. The first calls I made after thanking people were schools to try and put a schedule together. We were pretty isolated. Our closest Division I opponents, it's a 6-hour bus ride to Washington State to the north, University of Utah to the south, our closest conference opponent, Nevada, Reno, you know, a couple hours longer in that bus. And so trying to put together a schedule was the biggest challenge I had initially. And I called everybody in the country to see who would be interested in not only playing us, because we don't have an RPI, and some bigger schools were hesitant for obvious reasons, which I understand. But finding some schools that we could set up home and home contracts with was really important. A lot of people said, hey, yeah, we'd love to have you, and we can help you, you know, with some finances. And, you know, but at the end of the day, people in this community have been waiting 40 years, and I wanted to try and get as many home games as I could, even though we didn't have a facility either. I mean, we had nothing. And so at the end of the day, we ended up, I think, putting together a great schedule that people are fired up about. You know, 26 home games, 30 road games, and that was probably the first task on my list to try and put together.
The coaching staff you've put together is pretty impressive as well. You know, Travis Buck, of course, is a former big leaguer, and Brock Hunziker, well-respected and had a nice pro career of his own. Just how much support from the administration did you have to land names like that? And then, you know, were you surprised at all by the level of interest in those jobs?
Well, I had a ton of interest, and it was very humbling to, you know, get those calls and recommendations from some great baseball people across the country. And I had a number of great options to choose from. And, you know, but we did have our challenges in regards to salaries and just what we were starting out with. And so it took a while, and I was solo up until, you know, July before I was able to make that first hire. So again, just having patience and going through all the resumes, all the phone calls. I knew one thing, though, that I wanted to try and do was put together a young staff that were quality people and had a solid baseball background, but different roads traveled. You mentioned Travis Buck. You know, he was a high school draft pick out of the Tri-Cities area, Richland, Washington, went to Arizona State and turned himself into a first rounder and signed after his junior year. And then you've got Brock, who had committed to University of Indiana out of high school, of course, grew up in Indiana and ended up getting drafted in the third round by the Red Sox and decided to sign, you know, out of high school. And then even our bullpen coach, Mikkel van Kampen, who actually played for me back in the day, grew up in the Netherlands and, you know, pitched in two World Baseball Classics as a reliever for the Netherlands in the Beijing Olympics. And having guys like that that had a pro background, spending 10 years in the pro game, I learned another master's degree, really. And to have another chance to come back to the college game, I'm looking at it as almost a do-over, which most guys don't have that opportunity. And so there's some things that, you know, I look back at my young career as a college coach that I did because that's just the way it was done. And I thought it was the right way to do it. But especially being in the Cubs organization with Theo Epstein coming in and his plan and how he put together a World Series championship team was, I learned a lot, you know, and from Joe Maddon and listening to his experience and knowledge. I mean, there are just so many people. That staff was critical, and I feel pretty fortunate with the guys that we have on board because, you know, at the end of the day, I asked our players that we have on campus, we're capped at 32. That's as big as our roster right now we'll get, and that's an institutional cap. But I asked all of them, I said, who here has the dream of playing in the big leagues? And they all raised their hand. And so I took a selfie to make sure that I could hold them accountable when we start to get after it here. But having guys on staff that have experienced that with different journeys that they took and how difficult that is, my goal is playing the big leagues never happened, but that goal kept me on path, kept me working hard, and other opportunities presented themselves and been very blessed to still be in the game. But the staff that I've been able to assemble here, they're great, and they're only going to get better. And not only, you know, are we here to develop young men to become professionals in whatever career track they end up landing in, you know, the coaches that I have on board too, I want to try and develop and help move them on to bigger and better things too, if they choose to do so. And so far it worked out very well.
You had kind of a unique situation where you were bringing players on for a season, if you will, where you weren't actually going to be playing any games, that initial class. Were you maybe surprised in any way or taken aback by how much interest there was in this group of players that wanted to be the first, even though they weren't necessarily going to be able to take the field as Boise State in that first season? And then how important was that class for laying a foundation moving forward?
Well, looking back, it's critical. You know, that first month on the job when I was trying to put that blueprint together, there was no one that was going to come on campus a year early. And, again, having patience and going through the first 6 months, it was obvious there was plenty of interest. And, you know, I was looking to try and balance the roster with some JC transfers and some incoming freshmen, and those were going to be our two biggest classes. And then, you know, as things moved forward, we ended up having 12 guys on campus last year that sacrificed a full year of their life just to train and get acclimated and lay the foundation to where we're at right now. And looking back, it was probably the best thing that we did, even though no one was ready for any baseball players to come on campus last year. But, you know, when I went to our administration and we got the okay from the NCAA and the support, no one was on scholarship. These 12 guys came to Boise State because they wanted to be a part of this. And, you know, we had some Division I transfers that had to sit out a year, so the timing was very good for them. And then we had some incoming freshmen that were just maybe overlooked or had some walk-on opportunities at some other schools that, you know, committed with some JC programs. And so with those 12 guys, the Dirty Dozen, we call them, will be, you know, a group that we'll look back on in 10 years that will have really laid the foundation, and it has put us ahead of schedule. You know, now that we have our full roster on campus, and you know, we're 78 days away from opening day, having these 12 guys that have had a chance to spend some time with myself and the staff, and just kind of, you know, like I say, get their hands dirty and roll their sleeves up and start to build this culture. These guys are all builders, and they knew that coming in. And they're here for the opportunity, not for the full ride scholarship or the guaranteed playing time. And so I'm really excited to see how these guys are going to take off, and just the impact they've made with the 20 new players, 20 new faces that we have on campus this year.
Restarting a program is pretty rare in college baseball. Akron is doing the same thing this year, and Oregon did it about 10 years ago. Have you talked to anyone involved in either of those projects to, you know, gauge some of the steps required to making this a success?
Probably the two programs that I've talked to the most has been Seattle U with Donnie Harrell, and ironically, I canceled my interview at Seattle U. It was Donnie and myself and a third that they were flying in to interview to start that program up. And that's when I got the opportunity to join the Cubs. And but Donnie and I are close friends, and, you know, we don't talk enough because we've got a lot going on. But he definitely gave me some insight, and he can look back now over the course of time and can share with me some things that if he could do it all over again, he would look to do this. And then, of course, the Oregon situation, I had an opportunity to join George's staff, Coach Horton's, once he got that going, and actually brought me in to run a couple indoor camps because, you know, he'd never done an indoor camp before when he got to Oregon, and you know, being in Southern Cal and Orange County at Fullerton. So, and then the Cubs affiliation, I managed the team in Eugene, which of course we shared Oregon's facility, and just, you know, interesting side note there. And so the Oregon program and the guys that have come out of there and some of the former coaches that I've been associated with, they gave me a lot of good information as well. And of course, you know, the Pac-12 and Seattle U situation, I think we're kind of in the middle when you look at where we're at with this rebuild, if you want to call it. And I've tried to lean on as many people as I can to get as much insight. And, you know, 10 years out of the college game, I had to brush off some cobwebs in the NCAA manual and really make some adjustments coming back into the college game that I knew I was going to need to do, and give up some of those coaching responsibilities because I'm basically the front office, the scouting department, and everything else, and having a staff that can just take care of our players and make sure that they're there every day for them. It has been huge, but a lot of people have made an impact already, and the support that we have from our administration, our support staff, has been unbelievable. And again, everybody's looking at this as a new journey every day, that it's uncharted waters because there's not too many people on campus that have had any experience, you know, putting on a baseball game on campus or even being a part of anything like that besides, you know, football and basketball and the other Olympic sports.
You alluded to it a little bit earlier, but how long the local community's been waiting for Boise State to field a baseball team again. What has that local support been like? And are there anecdotes of, you know, you kind of having interactions with, you know, alums or local residents about the excitement for your program coming back?
Well, it's been awesome. And just to hear from people, especially former players, you know, there's a 40-year gap. And so the number of players that played at Boise State, you know, and it wasn't that long ago when Boise State was a junior college, has been really, really special. And having a chance to meet some of these guys, and some of them had professional careers and they're still in the community. And, you know, Craig Lawson, our sports information director, has played such a huge part in making sure that we have a bridge connected between our past and our future, because all the kids that I'm recruiting, you know, they just want to know if we're going to have a blue baseball field. They have no idea that, you know, baseball was once played on campus. And so we want to make sure that all of our current players and future players know that there was a history here, and we want that history to be evident, and we want the former players to know that they're going to be remembered and recognized. And Craig has put countless of hours and all of his help in sports information, student, you know, assistance, sleeping in the library, pulling out archives. I mean, Craig's put together updated records that our guys are going to try and beat. And he's put the countdown together, which ties in, you know, a piece of history of Boise State baseball or baseball in the state of Idaho. And, you know, one thing, building a roster that I'm really proud of, you know, out of the 32 guys that we have, 9 of those players have graduated from an Idaho high school. And I think that's important. I could have very easily gone to Orange County and brought in 32 players, but I think it was critical, you know, for the first time that an Idaho student and baseball player has a chance now to play Division I baseball at home in his state. That's created new energy and new excitement just for players in the state of Idaho. But people also know the state of Idaho is very small, and on a good year, you might have 5 players in the whole state that have a chance to go play Division I baseball. And 2 of those players want to go and spread their own wings and leave home and get out on their own and experience something different. But at least now they have that opportunity. And it's been really neat. And especially with my ties with the community and development and youth baseball, some of these guys that are on our roster right now came out of our, you know, local sports club, our Idaho Cubs program that I started, you know, when I was with the Chicago Cubs. So that's been a very rewarding process. And again, everywhere I go, people want to stop and get an update and talk about Boise State baseball, and they can't wait to come and watch a game. And so I think we have a real special opportunity to build something pretty unique, especially on the West Coast and our fan base. You know, being that football kind of mentality, now people can tailgate for a 3-game series instead of a single game on a Saturday night at 8:15, and they're not afraid to bundle up in cold weather and come out and wear the blue and orange and support the Broncos.
So you mentioned it briefly there that recruits are asking you about the blue turf. I think that's a lot of people's association with Boise State is the blue turf. Is that something down the road that you're thinking about, or what's your answer to those recruits that want to know if you're playing on blue turf?
Well, I ask them, of course, are they interested in playing on blue turf? And it's almost 100% the answer is yes. And I said, well, if I'm a betting man, I like your chances that you're going to play on a blue field. And so those are the plans. It's tough for me to wrap my head around it. I'm a traditionalist, and you know, you play baseball on green grass and dirt. But as you guys know, in the college game, with as early as the season starts, how many college programs are going to the artificial surface now, and with technology and what they can do? I mean, it's unbelievable the surfaces that these companies can put together. And so we're going to jump on that for obvious reasons, because we can get more work in and help our players, you know, get outside earlier and develop and get their reps in. And then also from a scheduling standpoint, you know, it's pretty easy to get to Boise. There's a lot of direct flights from all over the country. And, you know, the campus is close to the airport, and we'll have lights and for visiting teams to come in and make that trip and cost, you want to make sure you get the games in. And so we'll be able to definitely get the games in, even if the weather is on the colder side. We're in a dry climate, so we don't deal with as much rain and as the coast, or as much snow as further north at Washington State or Gonzaga. And so we feel like we like our chances. If we get a team in here, we're going to be able to play. But right now, looking at the designs and looking at the color of that surface, that artificial surface, it's going to be blue. And the biggest decision for me right now is what color is going to match with that for the infield dirt and the mound and home plate. So right now, that's my biggest decision.
You got a little graphic design going on now too. You add that to your responsibilities.
Yeah.
Well, Coach, it's been great talking with you, and you know, everything seems so far in the future still, but it's right here. So what in 2020 do you think looks, what does a successful season look like for the Broncos?
Getting through it and surviving. You know, we have nothing to compare really anything to. And so going through that first season and going through this first full year with a full roster, you know, we don't have anybody on our current club that has played an inning for Boise State. We've got some, you know, Jordan Britton, who won a College World Series at Oregon State, is really our most experienced pitcher on the mound, 60 plus innings in the Pac-12. And, there's a pretty good chance he's going to get the ball on Friday night at the University of Texas when we open up. But I think just being able to go through this first season, getting into the Mountain West Conference schedule, seeing how we match up with the San Diego States, with the Fresno States, you know, and everybody else. We have a very interesting conference when you look at all the schools that cover a lot of territory and elevation. And, you know, have we put together a roster that's going to be able to compete? And, you know, I know the at-large bids and the RPI, all that stuff's important for some people. But right now for us, we just want to be able to compete and see if we've put together a group of guys that can go out there and compete with some of the top teams in the country that we've been able to put on our schedule. You know, being able to schedule a home-and-home with Creighton, Coach Service was awesome, you know, and that was probably one of the schools we targeted right away. And we're going to be in Omaha in late March, and we're going to come in a day earlier so our guys can have a little bit of reflection and take a moment and realize, hey, this is where we want to be in June. So just even the strategy of putting that trip together is going to be big for our guys, and just get a season under our belt. And then we'll know so much more about our guys, where we need to move going forward. You saw our recruiting class in the 2020 during the early signing period. We signed one guy, and we're pretty excited about Jared Glenn. But again, we're just taking our time and learning more and more about our guys every day so we can make the best decisions moving forward. But I think, you know, having a schedule and knowing that, you know, we're going to play in 78 days, ready or not, getting through this first year and surviving, it's going to be very, very valuable for the future, and making sure we continue to have patience and build a strong foundation. And, you know, yes, we want to win right now, but we want to build a program, you know, coming out of Gonzaga, of course, the basketball team, the football program here at Boise State, that consistency, the success on a year-to-year basis and always being in the fight is obviously the ultimate goal.
Well, we're going to be very excited to follow along with that this spring. Just an exciting time for Boise State to have this new program and for you to be at the helm of it. And we'll see where it goes from here. So, Coach, we really want to thank you for joining us here today on the Baseball America College podcast.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and it's a pleasure talking to you guys, and just appreciate all you guys do for baseball. And, yeah, I look forward to talking to you guys again, hopefully soon.
Thank you again to Boise State coach Gary Van Tol. Interesting stuff there. I think people are going to be very interested in the blue field possibility. His challenges, of course, are similar to Akron coach Chris Sabo, but also different. You know, he's working kind of a bigger platform out there at Boise. They're very committed, you know, to this experience, and they have a lot to offer as a Mountain West school in terms of building things and you know, they're walking into a conference that can be a multi-bid league, and how is Boise going to compete against, you know, a San Diego State or a UNLV or a Nevada or a Fresno State, which of course has a national championship within the last 15 years. So they have some unique challenges, some unique advantages because of that. Akron now is restarting after just about a six-year absence, very brief absence, but any absence, it can be a killer. And so they it's a full reboot. There is some infrastructure remaining at Akron. There is a stadium that they've been working to renovate, but there's a lot that they've had to do from scratch. And so that's what Chris Sabo has had to work with there. And so now we're going to hear from the head coach of the Zips, Chris Sabo. Today on the Baseball America College Podcast, we're happy to be joined by Akron head coach Chris Sabo. Coach, you've been there about a year now. We're getting close to opening day. Just how exciting has this whole process been for you to be restarting this program now?
Well, it's been actually harder than I thought. I'm not a spring chicken anymore. So the reason I left the IMG Academy down there in Florida to come up here and restart a program, just because it was an opportunity to do something that has never been done before at the D1 level, where a D1 program was dropped and brought back for baseball. So I thought it was one big opportunity I had left before I retired for good. But it's been good, but it's been hard because, you know, when I got here, they had nothing. I mean, they didn't have a baseball, didn't have a uniform, they had obviously no players. The field was in disrepair. So it's been a long haul, but it's been good. I was happy to work with the players that we recruited this fall. And we actually just concluded our individual meetings to send them on their way for the holidays yesterday. So I'll be looking forward to January and playing some games beginning February 14th.
I imagine it's been a particularly rewarding process for you, too. I mean, you're someone with so much history in the state of Ohio. So not just the challenge of starting a program, but for you, I imagine it's a little bit personal and a point of pride to be doing this in Ohio and building up this program that is unabashedly trying to be an Ohio program and recruit kids from Ohio and kind of be a program the state can be proud of.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're not Ohio State. I mean, they're the Ohio State, obviously. But, I'm realistic, too. I mean, with our scholarship situation and finances and that kind of stuff, we try to get the local kid first, the kids around Akron. And if they're not interested, we try to get Ohio kids. But then if we don't get that, we'll go out of state. And that's what we've done. And to be quite honest, we've had a tremendous response from out-of-state kids, believe it or not. We actually got a catcher from Australia, of all things. So we definitely, before I'm out of here, would love to have, 70-80% of the kids from Ohio. But I think that's just going to be a matter of us proving that, we actually have a decent product and and know what we're doing.
The Akron program was only dormant for a few years, and my understanding is that there was a lot of people in the president's ear trying to get the program restarted, and that is kind of what led it to happen. Have you noticed a lot of community support or support from people associated with the university, just who are happy to have the program back now that we're so close to opening day?
Oh, I mean, I think they're thrilled. I mean, the response has been overwhelming, especially from former players and stuff like that. I mean, we raised enough private donation. We just completed a new baseball field, all field turf, which you really need up here with the weather. I mean, the old field was grass and dirt, and it was in a low area. Well, if it rained at all, you were done. Now we got a brand new field turf. We're going to build brand new stands and press box. So the response has been overwhelming. Part of my job as the head coach here is to go around the city of Akron and talk to people and try to make them aware of what we're trying to do here, which is kind of historic. And the response has been great. Obviously, we raised a lot of money in just over a year to do a lot of good things. I'm not done, but trust me, Akron's, I'm from Detroit. I'm from a big place. And Cincinnati's a bigger place. Akron's not quite as big as those two places. So everywhere I go, I mean, you know, I make it known that I'm the baseball coach, and, you know, and I would say the response is overwhelmingly hooray that they're bringing the baseball program back. It is the oldest sport at the University of Akron. So, yeah, I think it's been good so far. Now, if we can actually put a decent product out there, that will even help us out even more.
It's obviously just a really big job, a really big project. So when you kind of got to the start of this and you undertook this project and look what was in front of you, what were kind of the first couple things that were important for you to do to kind of lay a foundation to be successful moving forward?
Well, the biggest thing was getting some coaches. I mean, like I said, I'm approaching 60 years old, so I'm kind of old. My background's more pro coaching, and I coached down there at the IMG Academy. I was coaching the top team down there with all kinds of draft picks. And my thing was to get some young guys. And I found two young guys, Jordan Banfield and Dan McKinney, that are younger guys, go-getters, and want to make their mark. They're in their 20s. They're not married. And they have Division I experience. So I give them a lot of credit as far as their recruiting. You know, pro ball, you don't recruit at all. You know, I mean, the scouts draft the players, and, you know, I just have to coach them. So they've done a good job. I'm thankful we don't have to recruit 35 guys every year, because that was difficult. So hopefully next year's class can be a little smaller, and hopefully by 2022, we can just recruit the normal, you know, 10 players a year, which would be a lot easier.
Well, what about this group of players that you have now, this first team back, do you think we should know? Who are some players that have caught your eye early on?
Well, we got all kinds of guys. I mean, I give these guys credit to believe in this, because, I mean, there was nothing here. You know, and it takes a special kid to believe in something that doesn't even exist. You're pretty much going on what I say and what my vision is. But it's been great. We've been trying to, I try to get it where I can get freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors. It turned out we have mostly freshmen and mostly juniors. It was tough to get, sophomores to come in after 1 year junior college. And it was tough to get senior transfers. We did have one, but we have a catcher who played, JUCO out in Kansas. His name's Cam Tilley. I think he's going to be a good player. He's got power at all parts of the field. He's a good catcher. Can play first base, can DH. Got another kid, another junior kid, shortstop from Pensacola, Florida, which is amazing. He wants to come up here. And he'll be our shortstop. His name's Justin Barr. He's got the talent to be an all-MAC player if everything goes accordingly. And then we got a center fielder, Brenton Phillips, who was a Gold Glove All-American junior college player in last year, and he's from Georgia. That's going to be one of our players. Then we got a kid, Roy Thurman, out in left field, who was originally recruited by University of Louisville. Things didn't really go his way, and now he's going to be he's got our left fielder, and he's got a chance to do some damage. Yeah, those three guys. Four guys, I think, have pro ability, you know, from what I see. And hopefully we'll be successful. I mean, Akron hasn't finished over 500 baseball-wise since the mid-90s. So that's our goal. Our goal is to try to finish over 500 and make that MAC tournament. Top six teams make the MAC tournament in Cleveland. And I think if we could do that, it'd be a very historical thing for the kids that they'll remember all their lives.
Obviously, it's such a unique situation, kind of jump-starting a program like this. So in the first year, when you've an all-new team that hadn't played together, everything, to your point, is really kind of new, not only for this group but for the school, because it has been a few years. What does success look like in 2020, knowing that it's going to kind of be a process to get this program going?
Well, I mean, no offense, but, you know, everything I've ever done my whole life, I've been successful at. I mean, I was a hockey player, I was a golfer, baseball player, student. So, you know, like I said, I'm almost 60 years old and I'm used to success. So, I just my mindset. I mean, I didn't do this to win one baseball game next year. Now, I did this to build something from nothing and be competitive. Does that mean we're going to the College World Series? No. You know, that'd be great. You know, but like I said, I mean, success for me doing this from nothing with getting to that MAC tournament, I think that's the big thing. You know, being one of the top six teams to get in that tournament, I think that would be unbelievable success. And I plan on being there. I mean, I really believe that in my heart. You know, but I'm the same guy every year I played in the big leagues. I thought we were going to win the World Series. And I only won one of them. So, but I'm always confident. And we brought guys in that we thought could play. We got 35 kids that all in the same boat. I mean, they all believed in us and they all believed in Akron. So, I mean, they really get along. The young guys, old guys, and they got a special bond being, like I said, believing in a program that was gone, which is unique. This will never happen again, probably. So it's kind of cool.
You mentioned their College World Series and how successful you've been, and you played in the College World Series with Michigan. Just what did it mean to you as a former Michigan player to see the Wolverines back on that level this June?
That was awesome. I mean, trust me. I mean, when I was going to Michigan, we went there all the time. I think my freshman year, we went there and finished seventh, and my junior year we finished third. We might have had the best team I had my sophomore year, but I got hurt and a couple other guys got hurt, and we didn't get in. But it was awesome. I mean, I'm in a big group text with, a ton of Michigan, former Michigan baseball players, and that was a special ride for him. I wish I could have cashed it in, but it's still a great testament to Bakich and what he's done there and getting Michigan baseball back to being relevant, which is good. And you just need the football team to get to be back to relevant so they can beat Ohio State every once in a while. But it was awesome. I mean, Bakich is great. I remember he got hired. I went out to dinner with him and talked with him. And he's a baseball lifer. He loves it. Loves it there. And he's done a great job, obviously. I mean, So, I don't know what to say. We're very proud, put it that way. I mean, I'm still a big Michigan guy, and I was just happy for him.
I was someone growing up who wore, like you during your playing days, wore rec specs. And so I have a kind of a question about that. I mean, that kind of became such a signature of yours, especially early in your career in Cincinnati. Did you have any idea? Because I imagine you just made the decision because they made it to where you could see the baseball better. Did you have any idea it would become such an iconic piece of the way people remember you?
No, I really didn't. I mean, it was my second year in AAA. I was in Nashville. My first year in AAA was in Denver. And then my second year was in Nashville. And I was having a hard time seeing the ball at night hitting. And I finally went to the eye doctor and he said, you got some issues, especially when the sun goes down. And I go, you're going to need some kind of correction. I go, okay. So I tried the contacts. And now back then, the only contacts I could wear were the hard ones. And they didn't work. I mean, I don't know if you know my career at all, but I was a runner. I used to slide head first and stuff like that. And those contacts used to just fly out. And I couldn't see. Then I tried regular glasses, and they would move. You know, when I was running and stuff like that, they would move. You know, if I was trying to feel good, they weren't stable. So I actually walked by a Lens Crafters one day, and I saw Reggie Jackson, some kind of ad of Reggie Jackson wearing these rec specs. And I go, wow, I'll try those. And so I went in there and got the prescription, and I loved them because they would stay right on. They wouldn't move. They would stay right, very tight to my face, and I could see with them. I could run, I could slide, and they were fine. So that's what I went with. I didn't try to make some kind of iconic statement. I was just trying to see so I could make the major leagues and have a successful career. And Yeah, which is kind of funny because now I can wear contacts, but, you know, I don't run. You know, I'm not running and sliding anymore. All I do is coach.
Yeah, not a whole lot of running and sliding in terms of the coaching now.
No.
You've been at Akron now, I guess, for about a year. What do you think the best thing that you've discovered about the university and the city has been since you've been a part of that community?
Oh, Akron's great. And obviously, I lived in Cincinnati for 30 years. I've never been to Akron. And I'm from Detroit, so, I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with Ohio and Michigan. I just took I-75 right up, or Akron's more northeast of Columbus. And so I never went there. I used to go to Columbus, but I'm from the inner city of Detroit, and Akron reminds me a lot of Detroit. You know, Detroit gets a lot of bad press, but Detroit's a good place. Detroit's a good place. They're hardworking people. They're friendly. They say yes, sir, thank you, please, and I find Akron very similar to that. So I fit in. I mean, it's just normal for me to fit in here because I think I'm pretty polite, and so in that aspect, I like it. As far as the university, I'd never seen the university at all until I came up here on an interview, and it's a hell of a campus. I mean, it's an inner city campus, but the campus itself is beautiful. It's separated sort of like Michigan, where there's an athletic part at the south side of campus, and then the academic part on the north side of campus. And it's very compact, and I think it's great. I think it's great for students. It's very easy. I mean, you go from the athletic complex all the way to the end of the academic complex, and it's like a 12, 13-minute walk. I mean, that's pretty good. I remember walks. I didn't have a car when I was in college. I remember 20, 25-minute walks. Michigan's a big campus. You know, walking in, you know, 25-degree weather, and it wasn't very pleasant. But overall, I think it's great. We just want to put a good product out there and try to make Akron relevant again, at least in baseball.
Well, Coach, we're going to be very excited to see how that progresses. I especially will be watching closely. I, as a Cleveland native and someone as a Mac alum, I'll certainly be keeping a close eye on it. And we're excited to see what the Zips look like in 2020 and beyond with you at the helm.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm anxious like everyone else. I mean, I think we got a good team, but until you actually get out there and actually see how they compete against other programs, yeah, so I have a little anxiety. You know, this time next year, I'll have a better feel on what we need.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for joining us today on the podcast. We've been very happy to talk with you. Thank you to Akron coach Chris Sabo. Joe, interesting discussions both with Gary and with Chris. A lot of similarities, some differences. As we look at these two programs, you know, it's unlikely that either one of them is particularly competitive the first year out. Even Oregon, with all the advantages they had, only won 14 games their first year back. But as we look at what both of these universities have been able to do at opposite ends of the country, basically, what kind of stands out to you in terms of readiness and preparation and how they're going to develop as programs?
So I think the one thing that Akron has going for it that you alluded to is there was some infrastructure there. I'm sure from a administration standpoint, there are a lot of people in the athletic department who were there when baseball was there before, who kind of know how a program runs. That is all in place, and I think that helps. However, you know, I think Boise State's a program. I mean, we've not yet seen them take the field. They played some fall games. We've not seen them take the field for games that count yet. And yet, there's kind of a juice in that program. And I say that just because, you know, they do come off as incredibly committed. They want to do things like blue turf, for example. You know, Gary Van Tol alluded to it a little bit that, you know, getting players for that first year when they weren't going to be able to play games that entire first year on campus, he wasn't really sure what he would get in that first class. And they got 12 guys who were willing to come to campus and not play for an entire year and just train. I mean, that's asking a lot of a player, and they were able to find 12 guys, and you know, that's huge, because now you've kind of, to the extent you can have veterans at a program that's been dormant for 40 years, they kind of do in a way, and I think that's huge. So, you know, I think, again, first year, probably not going to be in a position to compete, but it would not surprise me when this first class and now this big class that just came in ahead of this season matriculates 2 or 3 years down the road, it would not surprise me to see Boise State be in a position to certainly compete within the confines of the Mountain West tournament and maybe get itself in a position to get into a regional with that first group. Because let's face it, there are kind of advantages in recruiting to being the first players to go through Boise State baseball. It would not shock me if we look back and we find out that they've actually gotten kind of a higher quality level of player than they might otherwise just because of the newness of this program. Because right now you are, you know, there isn't that proof of concept necessarily, but there is the shiny object of you guys are going to be the first group to take the field at Boise State in 40 years. And I think there's a draw to that. I think more of the challenge is maybe after year one, when they finish well under 500, let's just say, for example, now you've got to prove the concept in order to recruit maybe at that level again. So I think there's an opportunity to strike in a couple of years down the road with this group of guys. The challenge will be kind of building on that.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see what Boise's recruiting philosophy is like going forward. Like Gary mentioned, he could have just gone to Southern California and found players there, and they tried not to do that. They wanted to have a lot of Idaho players on the roster. And like he said, though, Idaho's a smaller state, especially when we're talking about baseball. So what's it going to look like in terms of attracting players to Boise? Now, it's like he mentioned, it's a city. It's a growing city, apparently. Didn't know that one. You know, it's a place that you can get people to with relative ease. But the Pacific Northwest is becoming much more competitive in terms of recruiting. You know, we've seen the rise of Washington. Oregon, obviously, has entered the space. And now Washington State, under Brian Green, looks like they're going to be more competitive. Certainly, he's going to attack the recruiting trail very, very hard. And Oregon State is still hanging out there as this behemoth program up there. So now you as Boise are trying to worm your way into this with the likes of a Gonzaga and Seattle and some of the and Portland, these mid-major programs up there. So where are the players going to come from? That to me is a long-term question that I'm interested in. And Akron should be set up better just in terms of a raw player standpoint, but there are so many schools in the state of Ohio already, it's tough. And again, there are only so many players. We're not talking about one of the biggest hotbeds, much as I, Cleveland native, hate to admit that. You know, there are only so many players in the high school ranks there to go around, and Akron is working at some disadvantages to programs like Kent State and Ohio State and Michigan. To say nothing of the programs like Vanderbilt and Virginia coming north to get players. So all of that is going to be interesting. Where these players are going to come from in both cases is going to be very interesting. Akron launched with this Ohio focus, but some of that I even realized talking to the president right after they launched was just buzzwords for a press release. And hearing Chris Sabo talk now, it sounds like, yeah, they want Ohio kids, but it's not necessarily, like, it's not even maybe if two kids are even. I'm not, like, at that point, maybe it's they go with the Ohio kid, but it's not going to be a limiting factor for them in any way, it doesn't sound like.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the 2020 roster, and it doesn't strike me. Now, I've not done a side-by-side comparison with the other schools at this level in Ohio, but it doesn't strike me as any more Ohio-heavy than you would expect any other, you know, Ohio program at the mid-major level.
I'll tell you, it's higher than Kent State. I don't know that it's higher than a Dayton or a Youngstown State.
Yeah, so, you know, and I think that's a good point you're making with where the players come from, because it really is two different situations. Would you rather have, it's an interesting thought experiment, really, would you rather have the more dense, talent-rich population, Akron, or would you rather have a little more territory, I don't want to say to yourself, but let's, you know, you imagine, you know, Gary mentioned, you know, there might be 5 D1 kids in Idaho in a given year, but you would imagine they're going to get more of a crack at those 5 kids than if there's 5 D1 kids in Akron, right? Like, it's more likely that Boise maybe gets into the living room of one of those 5 kids versus Akron having 5 D1 kids and all of these choices in the state of Ohio, to say nothing of the neighboring states. I mean, there are just not a lot of D1 programs around Boise. There, you mentioned some of the Pacific Northwest, but you know, a state like Colorado that puts out quite a bit of talent, you know, and they just have Northern Colorado and Air Force. So I think there's some.
Yeah, if you head east
there.
At all, I mean, Wyoming, Montana, there's nothing. And if you head north, there's talent to be had in British Columbia and out there in Canada. And, you know, there are other schools tapping into that. But there are areas, yes, I was looking at the Pacific Northwest, but all of those schools are west. There's not as much east.
Yeah, and they've it's clear from their 2020 roster that they're kind of already embracing that to a certain degree. They've got a couple kids, speaking of places we're from, they've got a couple Houston kids on their roster. So it's clear early on that Van Tol is very willing to, you know, say we're going to recruit nationally to the extent we can and see where we can find talent, but knowing that the talent is just not as dense where they are.
Now, we heard him say that every recruit's first question, him being Gary Van Tol, first question to him is, are we playing on blue turf? He said he would bet on yes. Even as a traditionalist, it sounds like the blue turf is coming to Boise. I believe my public position is no to blue turf, and I believe, Joe, your public position is yes to blue turf. Explain yourself, and how happy are you that it sounds like that will be the reality?
Oh, I'm thrilled with it. Is it garish? Yes. I mean, is it kind of a lot? Sure. But, you know, I've been on record. I'm consistent with my position on stuff like this. You know, if we take it out of baseball, I was an early proponent of the Oregon uniforms. Like, remember back in the Joey Harrington days where there was, like, a lot of hand-wringing about, like, look how ugly these uniforms are. They look like highlighters running around in the field. And now everybody, I mean, college football has gotten to a point where there are more alternate uniforms than there are standard. There's some exceptions. I mean, you know well, Ohio State doesn't really play much.
Actually, no, they do, but a Penn State, an Alabama,
fair.
They
okay,
do not.
Fair.
Ohio State actually has been very willing to mess with it.
Okay, fair enough. The thing about it is, I think traditionalists and in baseball, there traditionalists are numerous. I mean, that's probably is the sport that is kind of most grounded in that, are going to find it kind of weird and maybe a little offensive in some ways, but I, you know, the thing about it is, you know, you heard him say it, you know, I ask these kids if they'd be interested in playing on blue turf, and it's just about unanimous that they say yes. So that's the thing, is that, you know, say what you will about it and feel how you feel about it, but that stuff works. Like, honestly, that stuff really works, and they wouldn't be doing it because it's not going to be easier to do the blue turf. Now, they clearly have a blue turf guy at Boise State. Like, they're not having to find a vendor to put blue turf in. They've got somebody, but I mean, it's certainly not going to be easier to do that. I mean, you heard him talk about now I got to match the dirt color to it. I mean, so it would just be easier to throw green turf down there and just, you know, dirt colored turf like you see all across the country now. So they're doing it for a reason. And the reason is that this stuff works with 16, 17, 18 year old kids.
When that happens, I will be very curious to see who the next program will be that goes with the colored turf and what color that will be, because someone else will do it. It's no one else in college football has gotten the buzz that Boise has, in large part because their football programs aren't as good. But there's gray turf at Eastern Michigan, there's red turf at Eastern Washington, and Joe, you showed me
purple and, I think it's purple and gray stripes at Central Arkansas.
I mean,
me guess, that's where I'm Central Arkansas is where I would go. You know, it would have to be gray. I don't know that you could do like a purple field. Like, that seems
too dark.
You could
do purple dirt.
You could do purple dirt in a gray, quote, grass. So, yeah, that would be my guess. I'd go Central Arkansas if you're making me pick, because they've done it on the football side. And I think that, obviously, Eastern Washington doesn't play Division I baseball, so they're out if you want to pick from among the ones that. And I just think Central Arkansas, you know, being a little more advanced program than where Eastern Michigan is in terms of geographic location, things like that. I'm not going to claim to know the intimate details of the support they get, but that's just going to be my guess on that. So I guess the Bears of Central Arkansas would be my pick.
It'll be interesting. I have no idea who it's going to be. It will happen, though, and I'll probably not be thrilled about it.
I mean, it's probably somebody we're not, like, we're going to the obvious examples. It'll be somebody else. Like, we have no way of knowing, though, but you're right. Somebody is going to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be interesting to watch out west. With Akron, Chris Sabo, you heard him say that he's had success everywhere he's gone, and he's right. He has. He's very much the consummate winner. Akron, though, as he also noted, has not been. And so they're walking into a rather competitive conference. Obviously, Kent State has been the class. They're the team that went to Omaha within the last decade. We've talked about how we think Central Michigan is going to be good this year on this podcast before. Ball State's not going anywhere. We know what kind of developmental pipeline they've had in terms of players. Ohio is very consistent in terms of competitiveness in that league. So you're walking into that, and so that's going to be tough for Akron, and just breaking through in a conference with so many legitimate contenders is not going to be easy, but it also isn't impossible to do. You know, all of the places I mentioned have good infrastructure in place, as does Miami, which has been pretty solid but not had the breakthroughs that these other schools have had in the last decade or so. But if you rewind it back to when Tracy Smith was there, they were rolling really well, and the stadium's outstanding. Like, they have the pieces in place if things just fall into place a little further. So Akron is in a tough spot, but Joe, do you believe that Sabo can do what he wants to do and get them to, you know, this consistent winning formula?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of depends on your definition, right? Oh, and as a quick aside, Teddy is right. The stadium at Miami in Oxford, Ohio, picturesque, fantastic. I highly recommend it. I was there a couple of years ago and really enjoyed my time there. Parking a little bit tough. Parking is a little tough, but the stadium itself.
I mean, Oxford in general.
Yeah, the stadium itself was absolutely fantastic. I loved my time there. So, but yeah, I think it kind of depends on, you know, he talks a lot about getting back to the MAC tournament, and if that is kind of the first big, you know, target, I think that's achievable. Maybe not in year one, but you know, soon thereafter. Just because, to your point, I mean, there is, you know, maybe four teams at the top in Central, Ball State, Kent State, and Miami that have kind of consistently been in that range, and Ohio has their moments too, like you mentioned. But you know, 5 to 10 in the MAC tends to be relatively fluid.
Yes.
And so it's not as if, you know, it's really tough, for example. You know, it's really tough in the Big Ten. We've talked about this ad nauseum, just to compare, you know, as close to apples as you can get in the Midwest in terms of an avatar goes. The Big Ten is really tough to break into that top eight because there is kind of a system there where there is a subsection of schools that are, or subset of schools that are just going to be there year after year. So you've got six or seven teams fighting for two spots, and that's just a tough thing to do. A, the MAC takes six teams out of a 10-team league, so that's helpful. But beyond that, there's really a lot of variability from year to year in who's finishing in spots 5 to 10. So if you're talking, let's get back to the MAC tournament and let's go from there, I think that's perfectly achievable. Now, beyond that, I think it's a tough time, to your point, to be getting into the MAC right now, because it does feel like for so long it was Kent State and, you know, it was Kent State and then everyone else, largely. There were competitive teams, but, you know, Kent State was running that conference. And so maybe you felt a little more confident and then, you know, I can finish second or third in the league maybe. But now, I mean, Central Michigan's going to be good again. Kent State's not going anywhere. I mean, I'm at this point just rehashing what you said. But so I just think it's a tough time to be wanting to compete at a higher level than just finishing top six in the MAC.
We've seen Eastern Michigan, when Jake Boss was there, pop up. We've seen Western Michigan pop up at various times. Sometimes it can just be a matter of, can you get an ace? Like, can you get a real honest-to-God ace? And then that's enough to be competitive in the MAC. And so then it just becomes a question of, can Akron find one of those? And the reality is they're going to have to develop an ace. Like, you're going to get a good player, yes, but you're going to have to make him better, because that's just how this works. Like, Friday night starters, unless you're Kent State, generally don't come in as freshmen. And, you know, even Eric Lauer, you know, as a freshman wasn't ready for that. But you knew when Eric Lauer got to Kent State that he was going to be a dude. But almost no one else in the league can do that. Ball State can to an extent, but there's no one else. And so Akron's going to have to find a way to develop their own Keegan Aiken, which is how Western Michigan got to the tournament the last time. They got Keegan Aiken, they figured out how to get Keegan Aiken better, and then they rode him all the way to a regional, somewhat literally. So that's Akron's path. It can be done. We've seen some examples of it. It'll be interesting to see how long it takes that to play out at Akron and you know, what path they take to get there. But I'm glad to have Akron back. as a Mac alum, you know, it was getting dicey for a minute. You know, Buffalo and Akron cut their programs in back-to-back years, and there were whispers about various other potential cuts, and then what was going to happen. And Akron coming back to the conference is very good. I wish Buffalo would come back. To have this happen for Northeast Ohio is good, because as a Cleveland baseball evangelist, like, there's talent there. I mean, it's not the best in the world, but, you know, there's talent to be had in that city, and Akron is in a position to be able to capitalize on some of that, because Kent State is looking wider. They're casting a wider net. Akron hopefully can be there to find some of those gems that just need some additional polishing. So I'm glad to have Akron back, and I'm also very glad to have Zippy back. Zippy is instantly, once we get Akron back on the field, Zippy's a top five mascot. The kangaroo is awesome.
Oh, 100%. I agree with you there. And I think this is a kind of a good point to leave you with, is that, to Teddy's point, it is nice to have Akron back. It's nice to have Boise State coming back in, because there was a period of time not so long ago where, I don't want to say it felt apocalyptic, but it did feel like, I mean, don't forget, I mean, with Akron cutting the program in, I believe it was 2015, we weren't that far removed from Cal almost dropping their program. And so it kind of felt like, okay, maybe we dodged a bullet with Cal, a legitimately good program with history. We dodged that a little bit. But maybe that was showing some strains in college baseball, that's the direction it was heading. And with programs like Buffalo and Akron dropping, it kind of felt like maybe that's the direction we were headed. Now, we have a couple restarting, but we are, I mean, in a different note, Division I is growing, and so we are going to get above 300 teams again here pretty shortly. We've got, you know, in addition to these two, we've got Merrimack coming in this year. We've got a few more on deck for the coming year. So it is kind of nice to see, whether by hook or by crook, by Division I growing or by teams coming back, it is kind of nice to have it moving in this direction again.
Absolutely. And I mean, hopefully some other places take longer looks at what it would take. I mean, I've been looking right at you, Wisconsin. If it can be done at these places, it can be done at more colleges. And it's just a matter of people having the desire to go out and make it happen. And you know, Boise added baseball while cutting other sports. So in some respects, that's not great. You know, baseball knows that pain. But Akron did this without cutting sports. You know, they cut baseball and they found a way to add it back. They brought women's lacrosse in at the same time. And, you know, that's a MAC athletic department, just flat out adding two sports. So if they can do it, major schools can do this, and other mid-major schools can do this. So hopefully these two schools can find success, and that can, you know, aid the efforts of other places that are looking to restart their dormant programs, no matter how long it's been, whether it's been 5 years or 50 years. It can be brought back. And that's what these two schools, that's what Oregon showed, that's what we're seeing with Boise and with Akron. Again, I want to reiterate that store.baseballamerica.com has some fun holiday gift ideas for you. You can check out all of the content over at baseballamerica.com while you're at it. Ben Badler's international reviews are up for the July signing period. He's got team-by-team looks at who, I mean, it starts in July, but the signing period continues. So he's got team-by-team looks at who everyone in the big leagues has signed this calendar year. We have the top tens for the top tens for prospects for every big league team. Those are rolling on. We're in the Central. The West will be coming soon. And if you happen to be a fan of the team in the East, your top 10 is already online. So I encourage you to check all of that out. You can follow me on Twitter at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy BA. And we are very excited just to be able to continue to bring you the podcast through December. And I'm excited that Joe is here in the office to help do so with all of that. We will be back here on the Baseball America College Podcast next week. We have Navy coach Paul Costakopoulos lined up. We are excited for that one. So make sure you are subscribed to the Baseball America podcast. Whatever your favorite podcasting app is, be that Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, you name it, it's there. And if you can, while you're subscribing, leave a rating, leave a review. We're always happy to hear from you, and those things help other people to find the podcast as well. So we greatly appreciate everyone who takes the time to do that. Like I said, we'll be back here next week with another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I want to thank Joe. I want to thank Boise State coach Gary Van Tol and Akron coach Chris Sabo, and most especially you for listening.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.